shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Welcome to Shoot the Defence on FNX, and it's our deadline day special. I'm your host, Stel, and I have the pleasure of being joined by host of The Topic podcast, Ben Pierce, and the patron of Surfer Sports News, Harry Timu. Ben, long time no see, mate. How you doing?
All good, fella. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Good, mate. How's the podcast going?
Nicely. I'm enjoying being in the podcast world. You've always said to me that you've had fun doing it. And do you know what? I'm having a lot of fun doing it as well. It's good. And week by week, we're getting all sorts of different guests on. This might be me plugging the podcast too much, but we're getting different kind of guests on, which is nice. You've spoken to so many people on Shoot the Defence. Having a good range of guests is what makes it, really. And we've been lucky so far, from international pundits to authors to your plain and simple English press. It's been really fun, yeah.
I can tell, man, and the way that you interact with your listeners is fantastic. I've never seen anything like it, really.
Cheers, mate. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
You got that from your experience in Dubai, didn't you?
That and the tan.
Greatest place on the planet, I say. Harry, welcome back, mate. It's the first time you've been on for a while. How's things with you?
I know. It's been a good while. Yeah, all good, man. Just getting on with things. You know how it is. Watching the Arsenal meltdowns every day on Twitter and having a good laugh at, you know, the usual stuff.
The thing is, your hair hasn't fallen out yet. It's actually grown, so you can't...
No, I know. I've actually cut a lot of it off as well. I was pulling it out, so I thought I'd better cut it off.
Tidy up, yeah. Brilliant. Well, hopefully Rodri's going to be joining us in just a bit. He just popped out for something or other. I don't know, but he'll be back soon. So let's start with probably one of the most controversial transfers in football history, and it's not... in the UK, Kylian Mbappe's loan from Monaco to Paris Saint-Germain. Harry, you know a thing or two about finances, mate. Paris Saint-Germain can't say it's a loan that will become a permanent move because the agreed fee would go in this year's accounts and will probably put them in breach of financial fair play, which is blatantly obvious. Using the term an option to buy puts them in the clear for now. The whole situation doesn't sit right with me, mate. What about you?
I don't think the whole financial fair play thing is ever actually going to come into full force. I just think that these clubs, you know, if you can go and spend £165 million on a player, you can also afford the best lawyers in the world to find loopholes around this kind of thing. And I expect that's what PSG are doing. That's what Manchester City do. Because these clubs, they don't have the sort of income that a Real Madrid or a Barcelona or a Manchester United have. So that's the only way I can think they're getting around it. But yeah, it doesn't sit right with me. And to be honest, when the whole thing was introduced a little while back, I put my hand up straight away and said, you know what, I don't see how you can actually enforce this. There'll always be ways around it. And so it's concerning the way football's going, because what's the point in putting such things in place if clubs are going to find ways around them?
So what the guys on your podcast been saying about it, is everyone in agreement?
Do you know what? It's quite interesting because UEFA obviously have a massive opinion on this, and UEFA obviously are the leaders of financial fair play. But what astonishes me is that they don't seem to be enforcing it strongly enough, and I think that's the general conception from everyone. Obviously, they've handed out little transfer bans here and there to the Spanish clubs, but when you look at it on a world scale of things, there's nothing really that's going or screaming out to clubs to narrow down their transfer margins and to narrow down how much they're spending on a particular player. We've seen it at Manchester United the last two seasons, big money on big players. We'll see it again next summer from United, big money on big players. So is the financial fair play actually a cap on transfers, or is it a cap on profits? It's one of those. And how do you justify coming out of that whole 3 months? Three years, because that's what it is. You've got to justify not overspending over 3 years is basically the plain and simpleness of it. And it's just ridiculous because, you know, as you've both just pointed out, bit is if you're a club and you're rich enough and you can spend 90 million on Pogba and you can spend 166 million on Mbappe, you're going to be able to afford some genius lawyers, aren't you? So there's going to be the loopholes, the Qatari influences. Oh, let's bring him in as a World Cup ambassador so he can pay his own release clause. I mean, what a genius. What an absolute genius. Mbappe, let's take him on a year's loan so then we avoid this financial fair play year and the question mark will be that he's being paid over 2 years. Out next summer, we might get a shock and he might end up extending his loan deal by another year and then they end up paying him after the three-year gap has gone the season after. So there's going to be ways around this. And how do UEFA sanction it properly? Because if there's not tight enough strings on it, I think that's what everyone's sort of been saying to us on the podcast and international sports writers who I've been talking to. There is no way UEFA can stamp this on clubs. There is just no way. So it's pointless us even speaking about financial fair play because clubs will find a way around it because they're big enough, rich enough and strong enough.
Mm. Well, if you look at Paris Saint-Germain's revenue last season, 521 million euros. And an operating income of 83 million euros. If you look at commercial, you're looking at 394 million euros. So there is money there. However, I don't know. Like I said, this doesn't sit right with him. Not because they're spending money, because every team spends it. Obviously, United do and all the big teams do. But this is Paris Saint-Germain. It's not as if they're notorious for it. Let's not beat around the bush here. Had it not been for the Qataris that came in, they'd be in mid-table Ligue 1 side. But I need to question where this money is coming from. We saw with Man City how they named the stadium after Etihad, which is actually owned by the guys that own the club. And they name the training ground, all that kind of stuff, and they generate money some way or shape or form. I'm just surprised that the authorities don't monitor this and implement certain rules to prevent this. Because effectively it's laundering, isn't it?
I mean, yeah, still, you're spot on there. And I think the important thing to remember about Paris Saint-Germain, as an example, is they're a relatively new club. When you look at when they were founded, they haven't been around that long. They're not the most successful club in France. They're not the most decorated. So it's hard to understand where they've, where this, all of a sudden they've just become this super club. Like you said, it's simply down to investment.
Ben, Mbappe is a quality player with loads of potential, as we all know, but do you think this is too much too soon for him? He's still a teenager.
Yeah, well, quickly before I talk to you about Mbappe, I've just read some incredible news here. Breaking at the moment across the UK, Everton midfielder Ross Barkley has rejected a move to Chelsea. We know that, right? £30 million was the agreed fee that's now being said. However, Ross Barkley was doing his medical and had a change of heart and returned back to Everton. So he was having a medical at Chelsea and thought, no, I don't want this. And he's gone back to Everton. He's now going to stay at Everton and he's not going to move whatsoever. That's another player rejecting Chelsea.
Wow.
That's incredible. But we'll talk about that in a minute, I'm sure. But on Mbappe, yeah, his quality. He's going to... Look, you look at the players coming through now. Dembele, you look at Mbappe, you look at Asensio, and you look at Neymar still in the show over at PSG as well. That's four players there who are going to be battling for the next 10 years to get Ballon d'Ors, to win Champions League, to win World Cups. So with Mbappe, they're buying someone who's not just a brilliant young talent, but they're buying someone who's destined for greatness. Now, do I think that he's going to play at PSG for the next 5 years? No, I don't. I think he's destined for Real Madrid at some point. But is PSG a good move for now? Yes. Getting himself around the likes of Dani Alves, a winner. Getting himself around Neymar, who's had phenomenal experience and is a world-class player himself. Cavani, who's a hard worker. Let's not forget, Edinson Cavani was getting the crap ripped out of him season after season when Ibrahimovic was at that club because he couldn't hit a barn door whenever he was given a chance. Last season, Cavani was exceptional and he started off amazingly well, sorry, at the start of this year as well. Cavani knows what it takes to have to keep battling hard. And Mbappe's going to a club that is on the rise. They're looking for a Champions League. And do you know what? With that attack, with the options they've got, with the defence, with the midfield quality and variety as well, he's got a base there and he's going to be playing for a team that is going to be challenging, not just for the league on title. They're going to be challenging for the Champions League without a doubt over the next couple of years.
I would question if that's the right move for him, though, because, I don't know, as a player who has undoubtedly got talent and he's shown that in the Champions League as far as I'm concerned, then I do rate him, don't get me wrong. But I just think you could have joined Real Madrid, you could have joined Barcelona, you could have gone to a competitive league and really stepped up your game. Like, Ligue 1 to me is second tier. And, you know, a lot of people often say, you know, go to France, you're going to be playing against farmers every week. And with all due respect, like, without being disrespectful, there are a lot of poor teams in that league. And I personally would have liked to have seen Mbappe go somewhere where he was going to play in a more competitive league, because at the end of the day, that's your bread and butter. Champions League football is great. It's lovely. It comes along every few weeks. Fantastic. But your bread and butter is your domestic league. And I feel he could have gone somewhere with a stronger domestic league.
But then where does he go? For me, where does he go? With PSG, at least there's a club there that I said will be challenging for the Champions League. And there's a club there that's buying stars with Neymar. Already has started Dani Alves as well. We forget after all of this, and I think he's probably the biggest transfer of the summer. Dani Alves joined PSG. And Dani Alves, for me, is not just the best right-back in the world, but whatever club he's been at in the last 3 years, he has been exceptional in terms of a leader.
But Ben, wouldn't you say that Dani Alves is at the complete other end of his career? And
I do agree, but I'm just trying to react on in terms of signing the stars and the quality that they've got there. They've got players who are born winners. And if you're Mbappe, Madrid aren't going to buy him this summer because that means they'll lose one of Bale, Benzema, Ronaldo. And they're not ready for that. And Asensio's just coming through. Like, they don't need Mbappe right now. Give it another 2 years and they're going to be crying out for him. So what a nice step. What a nice step. You're going to go to PSG. You're going to go to a side that is now ready to challenge for the Champions League. If he had come to England, I don't think it would have worked out the same for him. I just don't think any... And do you know what? Manuel Vett said it on the podcast the other day. There's no elite English side right now. There's not an English side that you can go straight away. They're going to win the Champions League. Whereas if you look around France, Italy, Spain, there are clubs there. PSG, you would put money on to win the Champions League this year. You would. And with Mbappe, he is going to a side that is going to challenge for that Champions League title. And he will get regular football as well. And he's playing alongside Dani Alves, Thiago Silva, Verratti, you know, Marquinhos. He's playing alongside Neymar. He's playing alongside Cavani. He's got Lucas Moura in the squad, Draxler. There's players there around him that are world class. That's the difference for me.
I think the pressure is different. If he goes to Real Madrid, they're going to expect instant results. I don't think they're expecting instant performances from him. I know he scored 6 goals in 10 Champions League games last season for Monaco, and obviously his name is up in lights at the moment. But I think because Neymar is there, there's less pressure on Mbappe to perform. The pressure's on Neymar now, especially from a commercial standpoint. I think he's made the right move for himself. You know, he doesn't have to learn a different language. He's obviously settled in the country. He knows the country, he was born there. Lived all of his life. So it's win-win for him. As I said, with the whole FFP thing, like, you know, you mentioned before, Ben, what can you do? What can you actually do about it? You know, there's loopholes here and there. People are finding them, and everyone else is just sitting there asking the same questions that I've just done. So
was that a question? Sorry, you cut out then halfway through. Can you say that again?
No, I was just saying that everyone's asking the same question as I am about FFP.
Yeah, no. So, look, there's nothing. And again, no English side are going to be able to compete with that. So, it's the same as it is. United have already spent the money. Arsenal are never going to spend that much money. Liverpool are never going to spend that much money. Chelsea are never going to spend that much money. So, they're never getting any close. PSG are the only side, and Real Madrid. Two options there, them two or Barcelona. Look, I am slightly surprised that Barcelona didn't do any more to try and get him. They're crying out for him after Neymar. I thought it was a dead cert if Madrid weren't going to go into him that he would end up at Barcelona. But again, it's not happened. They've splashed money on Dembele, which a couple of German reporters are shocked about. 150 million for Dembele. There's no doubt in his talent, but the question mark is that they didn't even see Dembele regularly in a Dortmund side last season because he was protected, because he wasn't ready for it. Now he's going to Barcelona to replace Neymar. You would say that Mbappe would have been more ready than Dembele. When you look at the two players, Mbappe is going to cost 60 million euros more than Dembele. And you say that Mbappe is a level or at least 10 above Dembele. So again, you're working with standards, and you're not going to know whether these are good deals or bad deals or how good they are or how stupid the money being spent is until we get to the end of the season. And financial fair play is never going to overrule that, or is never going to get involved with all that. At the end of the day, the players still need to perform, and the price tag needs to go to the back of your mind. You see Pogba now this season, how much better he is now that he hasn't got that price tag on his back. These players, they don't care about financial fair play. It's their valuation. who cares? If UEFA come in with a ban, PSG have still got their men. It's just a load of nonsense, isn't it?
That's right. That's right. Well, let's move on to domestic matters because I think we've got about 27 minutes before I was going to say Big Ben strikes 11, but he's not.
I can strike at 11 if you like. I can make some funny noise.
You're on.
Well, I can't believe that Barkley story.
We could talk about it now. Let's talk about it. Come on. Ross Barkley.
So
he's gone to have his Chelsea medical and he's decided halfway through what was he doing, like 2.5K, and thought, sadly, I'm not going to join this club. This contest is going to make me run harder than this. What?
It's weird, isn't it? So all they're saying, and it's Sky Sports News are now reporting this heavily. It came from someone else at first, and now Sky are all over it.
It wasn't Ornstein, was it? From BBC that reported it first.
I don't think it was, but he was one of, I think, first said that the fee was 30 million. So the fee was £30 million, which you'd say for Ross Barkley, that's not bad, is it?
Well, if you look at the other players that have gone for silly money, I think it's a pretty decent price for, especially for an English midfielder. Do you know what I mean? If you're an English midfielder, you're commanding like 60 million already, just by the name of your passport.
Well, exactly. And to be fair, he isn't going to be fit until November, is he? So, you know, it's one of those. But yeah, the £30 million fee had been agreed between Everton and Chelsea. He was in London doing his medical and he changed his mind whilst doing it and is now going back to Everton. It's just mental. And to be honest, I've read a tweet earlier and I'll have to get it out. Sorry for going on my phone during the live stream, but I'm sure we're all checking our screens right now to see what is happening.
I'm telling you, he's been on the treadmill doing his fitness test or whatever. Conte's coming, he's put it to like level 15, and he's going, no, I'm not going to be doing this much running. He goes, no, you're going to do this because this is the running that you're going to be doing at Chelsea. He's like, no, I'm going, forget this.
Yeah, I'm not having that. And then Conte probably said to him, look, we need you to be able to play right wing back as well. That's when it was done. He didn't want it anymore. But I don't know what Harry thinks on this, but Lukaku, Llorente, by the looks of it as well, Oxlade-Chamberlain, and now Ross Barkley have all rejected Chelsea during this transfer window. Have you ever seen a team who have won the title be rejected by so many Premier League players the summer after? I just think this is mental, and Conte must be fuming that these deals haven't been done. But then what? I'll be interested to know from you lads as well, like, why wouldn't you join Chelsea? They're the champions.
Well, I think from my point of view, if I was a footballer, you'd rather play for Manchester United than Chelsea. You'd rather play for the bigger club. And I think the way the transfer window's gone this summer, Manchester United and Man City look like the two strongest teams. So that's one reason. Another reason is the uncertainty around Conte. Like, I can't tell you how many times this summer I've heard that he's got the hump about this, he's got the hump about that. And so as a player going somewhere, you may be reluctant to join them on the basis that you don't know who will be in charge. So there's that as well. I don't know. Chelsea are a less fashionable club than Manchester United, for example, in my opinion, because Manchester United have got that history, you know, world-renowned club, the biggest club in the country without a doubt. So you can see why people would pick them over Chelsea. And, all right, Chelsea were champions last year, but I don't think many people have got faith in them retaining the title. So could be a little bit to do with that. Who knows?
I also think that for Ross Barkley to just change his mind, obviously something has happened in the background in terms of maybe he's received another offer. And if it is Spurs, it wouldn't surprise me that he's decided to go to Spurs, because a lot of the players that he plays with at, for international level, he knows, doesn't he? He knows your Dele Allies, he knows Eric Dyer, he knows Harry Kane. So he probably trusts Pochettino more than he would Conte, because who does he know at Chelsea as an England squad, apart from Gary Cahill? Who?
Yeah, it's interesting you say that as well, because Llorente's rejected Chelsea for Spurs by the looks of things as well this evening. So that would be... I'm scrolling through now just seeing if anyone is actually reporting Barkley to Tottenham. But no one's really saying anything. And apparently it's just going to be going back to... The one thing that I read earlier on that was putting Spurs off was the injury. You know, it's going to be out till November and you don't want to pay money for someone who can't come into your side. And you wouldn't say that Tottenham are bad off in the attacking midfield or position, or even in the midfield position. So do they really need to splash the cash on Barkley tonight? No, they don't. Could that be a January move? yes, it could. But if Ross Barkley comes back from that injury and he's bang on form for Everton, where Everton want to sell, no, they won't. So, you know, it's been a strange summer. He made it clear he wanted to leave. And for him and for Drinkwater, if this Drinkwater to Chelsea deal doesn't go through now, Mahrez as well, these are players who have come out publicly and gone, I want to leave the club. And it's come down to the final day and deals still haven't been sorted out. Who do you blame? The player for coming out in the first place, sorry, and going, look, I want to leave? Or do you blame the club for not being on the ball enough and letting it get this late? It'll be interesting to see what deals actually do go over the line now. It really will.
I think you've got to take into account the domino effect when it comes to deadline day, though, as well. A lot of deals come to fruition because of the domino effect. Personally, I don't actually rate Ross Barkley that much, and I don't see why Chelsea were even interested, to be honest with you. He's not a player I hold in high regard. Neither is Danny Drinkwater. So I'm really surprised. Like, I feel like Conte's scraping the bottom of the barrel if these are his targets, because, like you said, Ben, they are the champions of England, and you'd like to think they'd be attracting a higher calibre of player.
Yeah, well, I do agree with that. And it's funny what you say about the domino effect, because we're waiting on Drinkwater to go to Chelsea for Adrian Silva to join Leicester, Boney to go to Swansea for Llorente to join Spurs. So you're right, it is about having the targets, letting those dominoes slowly fall down and then bring them back up with the new signings to sort of replace man for man in the squad, isn't it? And it's like what you said earlier on, Stelle, off the live stream. I'm a bit disappointed after all the hype last night on the transfer window today. There's not been an awful lot going into this last hour, is there? It's just stories that we already know about.
That's right. And the thing is, Ben, what I was about to say earlier is that I cannot understand why clubs leave it until the last day. Why can't they do their business before deadline day? What's the difference? I mean, they're going to be paying over the odds now for these players. Teams know that they're desperate. So Chelsea have gone in to sign this Italian fullback from Torino. They've made a £25 million offer for him. Okay, fair enough. He might be a decent player, but how much was he worth 3 days ago? Do you know what I mean? You're looking at transfer deadline day. How much was he worth a week ago? How much was he worth beginning of the season? Yeah. This is what I'm saying. These deals, they should not be done. I mean, I'm not one of these people to say, oh, you know, the window should close when the season starts, because this is the exciting part. But it's silly as well. You're seeing silly fees. You're seeing silly stories. I just can't understand. And this whole Ross Barkley thing, going back to what you mentioned earlier about, you know, him being injured. Let's say he goes back to Everton, returns to full fitness, has a good World Cup. How much is he going to be worth next season? If Spurs can get him now for £30 million, let's be honest, they've already wasted £30 million on Sissoko. So what's another £30 million going to be for Ross Barkley?
Yeah, it is right, by the way, what you said about Spurs. Graham Bailey, who's a well-respected journalist, has just tweeted that Barkley decided to wait for his Tottenham transfer rather than join Chelsea. And I'm looking on the live stream as well. Robert Palmer's commented with the same tweet as well. So it does look like he's going to be going to Spurs, but maybe in January, which will be quite interesting. And some more news has just been put on this transfer centre thing that I'm watching. Palace aren't done yet. Frederic Renau, who's the Bromby goalkeeper, is apparently on his way for a medical, and he'll be going to Palace on a season-long loan. Oh, so there you go. Yeah. Not a massive name, but still a signing.
Well, they got rid of Mandanda, didn't they? Well, he went back to Marseille, so
yeah, they're a keeper light, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, on the subject of Spurs, they swooped to sign two more players today, adding to recent acquisitions Davinson Sanchez, Juan Foyth, is that his name? And Paolo Gazzaniga. Now, Serge Aurier and Fernando Llorente have further bolstered Tottenham's squad, putting many doubting fans at ease. Ben, I think the Llorente move came about bit of a shock, really, for me anyway, a bit left field. Personally, I think he's probably the best backup possible for Harry Kane. Great plan B as well.
Yeah, no, I'm with you on that. I've got to say, I'm quite surprised that Vincent Janssen hasn't gone anywhere yet. There was rumours of that Janssen will be going to West Brom for about £23 million. And if that was the actual fee, then I'm massively shocked that Spurs haven't accepted that and gone, right, go on, off you go to West Brom. But then either way, I think that would also be a great deal for West Brom, £23 million for Janssen, who could still do a job. So, you know, yeah, they do need a backup striker, you're right. But I thought Llorente would be would be the, like we spoke about the domino effect earlier on, would be the replacement for Janssen in the squad. And now he's not. You're just thinking about, well, is Llorente going to be a bit part player? Is he always going to be on the bench, or is it going to be Janssen to drop out? Who's going to be dropping out? Who's going to be coming in? Who's the second choice? Who's the third choice? But it's options for Tottenham, and that's what they need. They need different ways to score goals. Wembley's a bigger pitch. Getting the ball out wide and sticking it in the box for someone to head in is a good idea at Wembley, because you've got the width to do that. You've got the space for the wingers and for the right back and left backs to get forward. And with Aurier, he's going to be a great option going forward for them. And Llorente to be in that box as well, to back up Kane or to come on during the game and make an impact, I think is a good signing. He's got the Premier League experience, but he's 32. So he's not a long-term replacement. He is someone for the next 6 to 12 months to get them through the line this season.
Absolutely. And we're joined by Rodri. How you doing, mate?
Hi, fellas. You all right?
Yeah, good, mate. Good, mate. How's things?
I'm all right, mate.
Good, good, good. We were just discussing Ross Barkley, who apparently was having his Chelsea medical and decided to change his mind.
Yeah, I've just seen that. What does he think? He's got another offer somewhere else?
Probably Spurs. That's what our money's on anyway.
It's funny how no one's got a Chelsea, is it?
What's that?
No one at Chelsea.
Well, why do you think he wouldn't go there? Because we were discussing that earlier. We discussed the possibility of maybe it's because he knows the England lads at Spurs and he doesn't know that many at Chelsea. Why would he turn down Chelsea and go to Spurs?
I don't know. Out of the big six, you'd say Chelsea I know that they've just won the title, but you'd probably say they're the smallest club out of the six, out of Liverpool, Arsenal, even Tottenham. They've got a better history than Chelsea. I know you go back years and years, but they've got a bigger fan base, I'd suggest, as well.
Fair enough.
I don't know, Javier. Over the last 10, 15 years, Chelsea have got bigger, you see, so it might have evened itself up, but I don't know. If it was my choice, I wouldn't go to Chelsea either, but that's his personal choice, isn't it?
I think someone's stolen Levy's checkbook or his card or something and has started making all these signings. It's not like him. It's not like him. But I can't think of a reason, like... And I know I'm an Arsenal fan, so I'm going to get slated for saying this, but I can't think of a genuine reason why you'd pick to go to Tottenham, who haven't won anything in my lifetime. My dad wasn't even born the last time Spurs won the league, so that says it all. But Chelsea have won European Cups, Premier League titles. I can't see why people would pick Tottenham over Chelsea.
Is that excitement? Is it that excitement, though, about doing it the first time? Is that what players like? Is it the excitement that they could make history here with a club? Or is it even the Pochettino project? He's definitely got something going on there. And as you've mentioned, Stel, the young English lads too. I mean, friends do get together. We've heard in the sort of, it hasn't worked out this time, but with Arsenal, the whole Lamar saga, 92 million, the deal with Monaco was done. So they sent Koscielny. And who's the other lad on? It's not Giroud, is it? Who's the other Arsenal lad?
Yeah, Giroud, Lacazette.
Giroud, Lacazette, and Koscielny all went up to Lamar's room, knocked on the door. This is why you should come and join Arsenal. And it's not happened. So is it the teammate effect as well? Might have not happened just in the Lamar case, but as you've mentioned with Ali, Kane, this young Tottenham lads, Trippier as well. Could that play a part in getting recruitment into Spurs? It worked with Agent Pogba. It worked with Pogba, with Lukaku.
But like you say about Spurs getting recruitment, and yeah, they've brought in players in this window, but none of those players make me stand up and say, you know what, they're going to challenge for the title now. None of them do. Llorente is a squad player. He's a second-choice striker. Yeah, Serge Aurier didn't cut it at PSG. Let's be realistic. Aside from his off-the-pitch troubles, he's never really made it. Davinson Sanchez, big fee, don't really know much about him, but you've got to quit, like most players that have come from the Dutch league in recent years, they've not really stepped up. There's obviously a big gulf in the standard. So I don't know, Spurs have made signings and I think they've boosted their numbers and they've got a squad which you need to compete across the four competitions. But are any of those players the type of signings that are going to make them kick on to the next level, I would question that.
Do you know what? My main, I would say gripe, but there's something about Pochettino where I feel that he's not the kind of manager that can coach players that over a certain age. I know he's brought in Llorente, who's 32, but if you notice, a lot of his signings are like early to mid-20s. And maybe it's because he feels that he can't mould older players. You know, they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks. That's the general impression that I get with Pochettino, which is probably why I think he signs a lot of younger players. What do you reckon, Rod?
I agree with what Ben says. It does have an effect when you go to these England camps and you've got players in your ear and you've got to say, oh, you know what, go there, you want to join. It does happen, that. So, but yeah, Pochettino, if it was a player, I'd rather want to play for him than I'd want to play for Conte. And not in a negative way, just that I like the way the Pochettino plays.
Fair point.
So that would attract me to the club the way he wants to play the football.
That's right. Okay, cool. Brilliant. Well, look, believe it or not, there are actually a handful of fans outside the Arsenal club shop in Finsbury Park with Wenger out banners. It's true. Our Arsenal season has been nothing short of a disaster so far. And while they've managed to hold on to Alexis Sanchez, Arsene Wenger faces his biggest challenge, and that's to repair the damage caused by Arsenal's hierarchy of players and Wenger himself. Harry, listen, I know you're a massive Arsenal fan. You know, Sanchez, Mustafi and Chambers were linked with deadline day moves. They remain Arsenal players for now. Oxlade-Chamberlain, however, is headed to Anfield in a £35 million move. Lucas Perez joins Deportivo on loan 12 months after joining Arsenal. Even as a non-Arsenal fan, I can safely say that this transfer window hasn't been a disaster, hasn't been a shambles. But what the hell is going on at Arsenal, mate?
Look, I said it before we went live as well. There's this thing at Arsenal, there's this culture of overreaction. And whilst I'm not best pleased with this transfer window, because I did think we needed at least one or two more players, you know, you've got to look at it. Look, if you told me at the beginning of the window we were going to keep Alexis Sanchez, I'd have laughed at you. So I'm over the moon about that. We've kept our best player. He's undoubtedly our best player. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain, for me, he's never really fulfilled his potential. He's been quoted as saying things like he wants to play further up the pitch. He doesn't want to be a wing-back. He wants to play in the centre of midfield and whatnot, or he prefers playing on the wing. And the fact is that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain has been at Arsenal for 6 years now. He's always played in attacking positions. He's had plenty of opportunities. He's played over 150 games for Arsenal, and he scored 9 Premier League goals. Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain hasn't produced so far in his career. He can put the blame on someone like Arsene Wenger or the position he was playing in, but I don't buy it, to be honest. I think he's not fulfilled his potential. Perhaps he's been distracted by off-the-field issues, you know, like he's got a famous girlfriend and stuff like that. And that stuff does have an impact. It makes players, you know, lose their focus. I'm not too upset that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's gone. And I think he was in the last year of his contract, and for that sort of money was a no-brainer. You had to take it. As far as the window goes overall, look, I've said it before and I'll say it again, the main thing is we've kept our main man. And, you know, I was worried this morning because I thought Mustafi was on his way out. I thought Chambers was on his way out. And I worried about the cover in the defence. Ideally, I'd have liked to have seen us bring in another sort of defensive-minded midfield player and possibly another centre-back. It wasn't to be. But look, we've lost 2 games. We're 3 weeks into the season. One of them was at Anfield. You know, Stoke, we were really unfortunate to lose that. And I just think, like, it just drives me mad seeing the meltdown that you get from Arsenal fans. It's as if, like, we've just been relegated. It's so over the top. And you know what? We're probably going to go and beat Bournemouth next weekend and everything will be back to normal. So, look, it's not the greatest transfer window. No doubt about it. I'd have liked to have seen more additions. But I'll say it over and over again. We've managed to keep our star man. And to be honest, that was the main thing.
Okay, so talk to me about this Lamar deal then, or this alleged offer from Arsenal. I mean, there was the story that Sanchez was close to joining Man City because there was a £55 million bid tabled, and then Arsenal made this £92 million offer for Lamar, and the next thing you know, Nothing's happening. Both players are staying at their respective clubs. I guess you kind of accepted the fact that Alexis Sanchez was going, so it was inevitable in your mind. But when you heard about the offer for Lamar, what was the first thing that came into your head?
First thing that came to my head was, in July, you weren't willing to pay £50 million for this player. And in August, you're offering £92 million. That's what came to my head. It's the Arsenal logic. Whoever does our transfer dealings is a complete and utter amateur because, you know, there's another example. You know, Kieran Gibbs, a few weeks ago, we rejected a £10 million bid and we end up selling him for £7 million. It just feels like it's just all so unprofessional. And look, I'd rather keep Sanchez than sign Lamar. And I say that because I know exactly what Sanchez will bring to the team. You don't know with someone like Lamar. It could be a bit of a risk. We were talking about Mbappe earlier. Lamar is a young player as well. Lamar is someone who just broke onto the scene last season. You don't know how he would adapt to the Premier League. And so you need to take all these things into account. I genuinely believe Arsenal made that offer in fear of losing Sanchez. And as soon as they realised that they couldn't get that deal done or it wasn't feasible, it wasn't going to happen in time, then they pulled the plug on the whole Sanchez thing. And you know what? As an Arsenal fan, it's nice to see the club actually putting themselves first. Because I was saying, like, you know, I know there's still like 15 minutes left, but I wouldn't have been surprised if at 10:30 Arsenal came out and said he's on his way. So there's always that fear with Arsenal. The ownership quite clearly are in it for the money. And you always worry that they'll look after their pocket before they look after the team. So, look, not a great transfer window, but I'm pleased we've kept him. And you know what? We didn't sign Lamar, but am I that bothered? Not really, because even if we did, I don't think he was the type of player that this team is missing.
Yeah, I know what you mean, mate. I know what you mean. The thing is, when I look at the Arsenal squad at the moment, you got rid of Gabriel, you kept Mustafi, which I guess is a positive because a few days ago he wanted to leave. Is there a sense that Wenger is kind of like cutting out the weeds, so to speak, pulling them out, players that are bad influences? Do you think we're going to see less of certain players that have been underperforming lately?
I think Wenger's, I think that's a good way of putting it. He's cutting out the weeds. And I think he's acknowledged that he's made some mistakes in recent years with some of the players he's brought in. Personally, I wouldn't have sold Gabriel because I thought when we switched to a back three towards the back end of the last season, he looked a far better player in that system. And I'm not saying he's a world beater and I'm not saying he would have been a starter for Arsenal, but I would put him ahead of someone like Callum Chambers at the moment, and for that reason, I probably would have kept him. It's hard to say. I think a lot of players have underperformed. I think Mesut Ozil was one of them. But I still think Wenger has his favourites, and I still think there's certain players in that squad that no matter how they perform, they will always be in that side. Like, for me, Ozil and Ramsey can't play in the same team. Too similar. Both want to play that number 10 role. Both want a free role, leaving our midfield exposed all the time. And you know, unless you're willing to actually grow a pair and say, you know what, we're away this week and we can't play like that, I'm going to drop you, then nothing's ever really going to change, in my opinion. Wenger's done for me.
Fair enough. Well, look, if Arsenal are willing to spend £90 million on Lamar, and I'm going to ask this question to all three of you. If they're willing to spend £90 million on Lamar, why didn't they open the checkbook and try and get Van Dijk? Why didn't they open the checkbook to try and get Riyad Mahrez? What about Sanchez, who's gone to Swansea on loan? These are three players that definitely would have improved Arsenal.
I think with that, Estelle, sorry, just to, before you go to Ben, with that one, I think, you know, you say we were going to spend £90 million, and that's right, but we were going to recuperate £60 million of it from the Sanchez deal. So you've got to take that into account as well. In terms of, you know, going out and spending, Arsenal are limited financially. I don't care what anybody says. I woke up this morning and was reading all the tweets last night from David Ornstein, who's usually quite reliable with Arsenal, and he was saying that there's financial restrictions. So you never know. You don't know what to believe. You know, from the morning, we've got no money, and then in the evening, we're making £90 million bids. You just don't know what to believe.
Fair enough. Ben, what do you reckon?
Who wants to play for Arsenal? Like, I'm sorry.
I hate talking about Arsenal. I really do. And this is in the greatest respect to Harry, because the way he's just spoken then about Arsenal and how level-headed he is refreshing to see, because I don't see it from any Arsenal fans. And that's what's really frustrating. The problem with Arsenal is, and their fan base, is that they've got such an influential YouTube channel out there with key figures who just chat. Am I allowed to swear on this?
Go ahead.
They chat so much shit. They chat shit all the time. Whenever they're on it, they play up to the camera. They show off a side of them that's not true. They just chat nonsense. And then the way they act is embarrassing. It's absolutely embarrassing. But then as a club, you know, and again, with respect to Harry, I don't want to talk about stuff that I don't know. But from an outsider's point of view, the club's in an unbelievable state right now, with a guy leading them, Kroenke, who no one believes in. And it looks like there's a massive breakdown of communication between whoever's dealing with transfers, whoever's dealing with a team, whoever's dealing with a club, and then whoever's dishing out the money, because it just doesn't seem to be a structure there. Then you look at Arsene Wenger, who, how on earth, number one, how does he, and I know it's out of respect to the guy for everything he's done, and I would never say, look, he deserves to be fired. But there's ways you mutually depart. There's ways things can be done professionally. And there's ways things can be done with the most utmost respect towards a person who's given you an incredible service. And that is what should have happened last summer. And Wenger should have been talked into walking away. Now he has stayed. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again. I said it before I spoke to you, and I strongly believe it. Arsenal are going to struggle this season. They're going to struggle. The Europa League, the Premier League, they're going to, at one point this season, they'll have to do what Mourinho had to do, and that's make a decision what they prioritise to get back in the Champions League. But I think they'll be forced to make that decision a lot earlier than Mourinho had to make it with United, which I think will force them down the table quite considerably. The way I watched them play in the opening stages of this season, even against Leicester, they didn't deserve to win that game. Leicester were brilliant throughout of it. And Arsenal, look, they scored the most goals. They won the match. Fair play to them. But they didn't do anything until about the 75th minute. And they didn't look exciting until that moment. Now, the one thing that Arsenal have always given us is excitement, fluid football, and a bit of class. They've lacked it this season. They haven't looked anywhere near. And I don't know whether that's because they don't want to play for the manager. I don't know whether that's because there's too many people in the dressing room not influencing the side correctly. And I don't know if that's because, just hands down, they don't have any leaders or a defence strong enough to deal with the Premier League. And there is actually one thing I want to mention to Harry. We mentioned a second ago about Chamberlain leaving, and that you don't mind it. But I don't know if you've seen the Aaron Ramsey post on Instagram, which surprised me that a player's come out and done this, because at any other football club, he wouldn't play again. You can't question a manager's decision like this. He hashtag shambles when posting about it on Instagram.
1 minute, Ben. Sorry, I just want to come in. So he's actually removed that now. But it was explained that Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain's nickname in the dressing room was Shambles. And he was given that nickname by Per Mertesacker because he's always late. So he called him Shambles, and that's where that's come from. I saw that and I was in shock, and then I'm sad. I've been watching Sky Sports all day, and they came out.
How mental is that? And again, do you know what? Actually, that leads me back onto the point. I might have made myself look like slightly a bit of Muppet questioning it, but that leads me back onto the point of social media power, because Arsenal fans were in an absolute frenzy when that was posted up, and it shows the influence of social media, and it shows how we forget that teams and teammates have personalities, and they are individuals, and they're people at the end of the day. I think they will miss Chamberlain's influence, and I think Oxlade-Chamberlain would still have been a good option for them this season. He's never cemented a place in the team, but let's not kid ourselves. There is one reason why he's gone to Liverpool, and that's to play central midfield, and that wasn't going to happen, I don't think, at Arsenal. Although, they are lacking in that department, so God knows. I just think Arsenal are just, they're miles away. They're not the club they were, and you can mention all the names under the sun, but I don't think anyone would want to play for them right now. I really don't.
Mm-hmm. Thing is, Rod, I'm not going to ask you your feelings on Arsenal because we're here every week. I tend to aim this question at you because your responses are brilliant. But tell me about what you reckon of what Harry said earlier about Arsenal not having any money. Obviously, there's the Premier League money. There's the Champions League money from last season. where is it going if there isn't any money to spend? They can't surely be going in the pockets of Kroenke, surely. Not all of it.
Buying into the fans. They've obviously got money. How much the tickets there? The season tickets at Arsenal, it's the most expensive in the league, isn't it?
Well, Harry's got one, ain't you, Harry?
Yeah, it is. It's about, well, this year it dropped in price because of the Europa League. So the Champions League games were always classed as Category A games, whereas the Europa League ones have gone down a category, so the ticket was cheaper. I paid about £850 this year. But what people need to realise with Arsenal as well is that the season ticket includes cup games as well, which at a lot of other clubs it doesn't. So we get our European games included in that, and we also get our FA Cup games. So it is the most expensive, but it's not so much more pricey than everybody else when you take everything into account.
There you go. All right.
What I'm trying to say is that they make money, so they've got money. So you're trying to sell me Arsenal Football Club. It's just sold out every week. I don't know how many times a year, 22, 23 with the European games. And you're trying to tell me, and with the TV money, they haven't got money.
Oh, no, I'm not saying that they haven't got money.
I'm answering Stel's question when he's asked me before. They've obviously got money. So where they've come out, why are statements coming out saying they've got no money is just a total flat-out lie. Because they've obviously got it, because they've just offered £90 million to someone.
I mean, there's all kinds of rumours going on as well. And like Stan Kroenke is a horrendous owner. And we actually, on our podcast, we had the leader of the San Francisco Arsenal Supporters Club. And he obviously gave us a bit of an insight into Stan Kroenke being American and knowing about his other franchises and how he runs them. And he's happy to just make money. And all his teams are performing at a mediocre level at the moment. There is talks going around that the reason he didn't want to spend the money in this transfer window because he's trying to secure a loan for something else, for another project. And Arsenal having a certain amount in the cash reserve was a condition of that. So I don't know how true that is.
He's basically using Arsenal as an asset.
Which that's what football clubs are to owners. Now, you just got to look at the Glazers for that. That's what we are. We're an asset. We're a money turner. All football clubs are that. But on a less depressing point, do you want some transfers that are done? I'm just scrolling through my timeline now. Leicester City have completed the Dragovic transfer from Bayer Leverkusen. That's on a season-long loan.
This is the guy that chose to go to Germany and still playing for Van Gaal.
Apparently, that was the point of time. Wasn't he in Ukraine for a little while as well with Kiev, I think?
I think he was.
So he's gone to Leicester on a season-long loan. Tim Krul, the Newcastle keeper, has signed on a season-long loan to Brighton, which is an interesting one. And now reports are saying that Ross Barkley failed his medical. That's why he didn't join Chelsea. And Chelsea are very much still interested in signing him in January.
Okay.
Stories coming out there. Do we believe Sky Sports? That's the question.
I don't know. Sometimes they bring out their own stories because they got a little thing with Sky Bet, don't they? So let's talk about Renato Sanchez, because that was the most random transfer I've seen in a long time. You know, he's a promising central midfielder, Portuguese international, did quite well at the Euros, was touted as a possible Manchester United signing last season, and he's ended up at
To me that makes perfect sense for him, because obviously they've got the connection with Ancelotti and the Swansea manager. So he's obviously not played enough games at Bayern Munich. So they've obviously had an agreement saying, you know, he'll get the experience that he needs, and that will probably bring him on to be a better player. And you'll see him go back to Bayern Munich next year. If he went to one of the big clubs like Arsenal, they've got a million number 10s or a million midfielders like him. He won't get as much game time, so probably at Swansea you'll see him play every week, and that'll probably progress in his development.
Well, he's a box-to-box midfielder, and something that Swansea haven't had since, I can't remember, when did the last one had a box-to-box midfielder? I can't remember, Sigurdsson? He wasn't even box-to-box. So he'll give them something extra. Ben, you've seen them a few times. What do you make of this kid's physical ability? Because I don't think he'll have any problems adapting to the Premier League.
Do you know what? Rodri could probably come off the back of me saying this. I think he'll know a lot more about players' mentality and the mindset for a young kid as well. He had a very poor And when I say very poor, he didn't make the starting lineup at all, did he? I think apart from one game for the Portugal under 21 team. This was after starting the Euros for the first team last summer. And he didn't look great whenever he came on the pitch. He looked fatigued. He didn't look composed on the ball like we've seen before. And he didn't look like that star player that we all thought was going to set the world on fire. And Roger, I don't know, do you reckon he can pick that confidence back up? Do you think that will... Because that's a drop, isn't it, in terms of a performance style from what we saw last year at the Euros for the Portuguese first team to not even competing in the under-21s. That's a severe decline.
It is, but that might be the mentality of the lad. That he might have just been, you know what, I'm too good for this. But it's the wrong attitude to have. But he may have took that line, but I just don't know. It's a tough school to come to the Premiership and to play, and you'd have to be and very fit to last the English game. So it'd be difficult, but you know he's got potential, and he's obviously the manager will know a bit about him by speaking to Ancelotti. So just have to wait and see. But that under-21s game, I don't know. It really should be shining in games like that. So. Attitude on, or maybe just down in confidence, and I don't know.
Yeah, I think Paul Clement, you're right about him and his Ancelotti collection. You just sort of hope that Clement does get a nice start of football with Swansea this year. With Boney now up front, that deal's done, by the way. Don't know if you mentioned that. Boney's confirmed now at Swansea, which will pave the way for Llorente to Spurs to be announced any second. You know, it's very, very interesting to see whether he can play the football that he wants to play. There's no doubting Clement's talent as a coach. He's severely talented. Can he cut it now as a full-on manager? We'll sort of have to wait and see, but I hope so, because some of them, you know, and to be mentored by Carlo Ancelotti, boy, that's some experience, isn't it? That's wicked experience. And Sanchez now gets all that with Paul Clement, and he's had it with Ancelotti already. So let's wait and see. I don't know, like, there are rumours that there is an option to buy. I'm not sure, though. I'm not 100% convinced there will be.
I think Sanchez just lost his way a little bit, to be honest. Young player. Got to move to Bayern maybe a little bit too early in his career and just lost his way a little bit. But hopefully it works out for him. I actually like Clement. I like the way he plays football. I like managers like that. I like young managers coming through. I like Marco Silva as well for that reason. I don't know. I hope he can do all right. It'll be tough for Clement, though, because I think no matter what you say, you know, at Swansea you're going to struggle with their resources and things like that, and playing the nicest football, as we know, even though it might be the right way, it doesn't always come off in the Premier League. So we'll see.
Yeah, unfortunately they're just one of those clubs where their best players just up sticks, don't they? I mean, Sigurdsson has hurt them, I think, anyway.
Ooh, a last minute rumour from a do you know the tabloid Cope in Spain?
Yeah.
Well, we know the Spanish transfer window shuts tomorrow at 11 PM, right? There's 24 hours left.
Is this related to Coutinho?
No, this is regarding Mesut Ozil.
Oh, yeah.
And Barcelona are in talks with Arsenal over a €60 million move for Mesut Ozil. Now, I think he's worth probably a little bit more than €60 million if we're looking at prime Mesut Ozil, who we maybe have.
Well, the prime Mesut Ozil that we haven't seen since he came.
Yeah, well, that's what I was about to say, that we haven't seen. Not a bad price, but surely you haven't bought anyone in. You can't let go of Mesut Ozil now, surely. But they've got another 24 hours to get that done, if it's possible. So there's one to keep an eye on.
I hope not, but again, it's the same situation. Will the board look at him and say, you know, he's got 1 year left, let's cash in? Don't know.
There you go. Well, look, what about Oxlade-Chamberlain then? Because we haven't really spoken much about him. Rod, how well do you think he will do at Liverpool? Oh, Rod's gone. He's probably gone to let the cat out or something.
I'll answer that. It's a weird transfer all round. I don't understand. I don't understand why Arsenal have let him go. I don't understand why Liverpool have brought him in. But then I said the same about even if Lamar had signed for Liverpool. And that was never going to happen, by the way. Now there's reports coming out saying that was just to push the price up for a last-minute bid. And that last-minute bid did come in, but the deal couldn't be done. I just think it's a weird one. Liverpool look great going forward, so he's not going to play right or left wing. He doesn't want to play right back, doesn't want to play left back, so that's out of the question. He's not good enough to be a central midfielder in a team that's meant to be challenging for the league. So I see it as a very, very weird one. Good squad player, good English presence, got a lot of friends, very popular footballer. 35 million, 40 million, whatever the fee is. I just think Arsenal could have just kept hold of him. I don't know. I don't get the big excitement with it. Let's put it that way.
The thing is, I can see why Liverpool want him. First of all, he's homegrown. He's young. He's quick. He's got a lot of stamina, which is obviously two traits that Klopp wants to utilise in his gegenpressing system or whatever rock and roll football they call it, heavy metal football. Sorry for getting that wrong. But it confused me in the sense that I haven't seen Chamberlain develop much in the 6 years he's been at Arsenal. Yeah, I've seen him bulk up and he's still got that blistering pace and the strength. But is his end product there? Does he get enough goals? Does he work hard for the team? Based on Sunday, I say no. Harry, you know him better than we do, obviously, having seen him at Arsenal. Happy with him leaving? Are you that bothered?
I'm not that bothered, to be honest. What am I going to miss from Oxlade-Chamberlain? I'm going to miss him picking up the ball and running into empty spaces. I'm going to miss him getting to the point where he needs to do a bit of skill and he gets the ball tangled up in his feet. I'm going to miss his crosses going to the far corner flag. Like, I'm going to miss his zero goals that he scores every season. Like, I'm not really going to miss him, to be honest. I think, look, without going into the whole English premium debate, if he was Spanish, he'd have gone for 10 million. That's honestly my opinion. Like, I can see why Klopp would like him. He's got the attributes that appeal to Klopp. He's quick, he's strong, he likes to play on the front foot. And so I can see why Liverpool have done it. I think Liverpool have taken a bit of a risk, though, if they're planning on converting him into a central midfielder, because he's only ever played a handful of games there. And to go and spend £35 million on someone who really and truly doesn't know the position seems like a bit of a risk for me. I don't know.
Yeah. And are you guys surprised that Liverpool haven't strengthened defensively? Because there's all this talk for months about Virgil van Dijk. The guy even went on strike. He's training with the reserves now. He will still be training with the reserves until January. I said it on Tuesday's show. Is it going to be too little too late if Liverpool sign him in January? Because, you know, how much of an influence can he be and will he be match fit? I just can't understand why Klopp hasn't brought another defender, or even a plan B, or even brought in someone on loan.
I actually agree with Jamie Carragher, actually, when he was on Sky Sports. You know, when he had that heated debate with Redknapp about, you know, bringing in defenders. I actually agree with him. The way Klopp's team play, they'll always be defensively exposed. And, you know, you can go sign Virgil van Dijk and whatever, but ultimately, I still think Liverpool will be shaky defensively, and that's because of the way they play. Seen it at Arsenal for years, same sort of thing. I am surprised they haven't strengthened defensively, but it's quite clear that Jurgen Klopp genuinely believes that his team are good enough to blow anyone off the park, and defending is similar to Pep Guardiola's, defending comes second.
Yeah, and like the greatest manager of all time once said, you win games with a great attack. You win titles with a great defence. And when those words come from Sir Alex Ferguson's mouth, I couldn't give a crap about what Jurgen Klopp says. You know, I'm as shocked as everyone else. Van Dijk was there for the taking. It didn't happen. I don't understand it. You know, he's a quality defence. If Van Dijk had joined Liverpool this summer, I would have been crying myself to sleep. That's how good I rate him. I think he's phenomenal. And if he had joined City this summer, I would have cried myself to sleep even more. That's how he is a very, very good defender, and he's Premier League proven. And he can only get better. And he was the player Liverpool needed to get, and they didn't get him. And defensively, Harry, he's absolutely spot on. They are always, always going to get found out. And they can't win every game 4-3. So they're going to lose matches, and they're going to lose matches against Club Nation. We saw it against Crystal Palace, by the way. Very tight until the 75th minute, and they got one, then they got another one quickly. And that's, there's not going to be every game that they're going to do that. They're going to lose games 1-0. They're going to draw games 0-0, just like last season.
No, you're right. You're right. I completely agree. You know, they conceded 3 on the opening day against Watford. You know, they were lucky against Crystal Palace. Had it not been for a Benteke, blasting his chance over the bar, it would have been a different game. And Arsenal obviously didn't turn up the other day. But Rodri, you know, you said it the other week, Van Dijk is the closest player that we've seen to Rio Ferdinand. Are you surprised that Liverpool haven't strengthened defensively?
Yeah, I agree with what Harry and what Ben said. They're just not strong enough at the back. And we spoke about this a couple of weeks ago about Van Dijk. It's a strange one how no one's gone for him because he looks like a class central defender, but it's just maybe there's an underlying issue with injuries or. He's like I talked about. He's that close to Rio Ferdinand. Well, obviously Rio Ferdinand was a world class central defender, but he sort of plays in that kind of way. Yeah, it's a strange one, but Saints seem to have stuck the reels in and wasn't going to sell him anyway. So maybe that's just scared him off. But yeah, for much longer though.
I've got a done deal come out of nowhere, by the way, lads. Let's get your reactions to this. Ryan Babel was signed for Newcastle United. I feel like we've gone back 5 years.
Yeah, that's one of Benitez's signings from when he was at Liverpool, no?
Apparently he's keen to reunite with Rafa again and he's completed his move to the team. It's all done.
Was it from Beşiktaş?
I think it is, isn't it? Is it Beşiktaş? It's one of those clubs. Yeah, I'm just seeing him now in a Newcastle shirt.
he wasn't going to get in the Beşiktaş side this season because they've made a lot of decent signings. You know, they brought in Negreira, they brought in Medel. They've brought in a lot of good players, Beşiktaş, this summer. They're doing what Chelsea did back in the day, just spending money left, right and centre. But going back to Liverpool, when you look at their squad, especially at centre-back, Sakho is obviously going to Crystal Palace, which is a very good deal for both sides, both parties, should I say. They've got Lovren, they've got Matip, they have Joe Gomez, and they also have Klavan. So let's say Matip gets injured, or even Lovren gets injured. That's not a great backup plan as far as I'm concerned. I would worry if I were Liverpool fans, especially from a defensive perspective.
They haven't even got Lucas anymore who can slot in there as emergency cover. So, yeah, I'd be concerned as well as a Liverpool fan. But coming from a club that hasn't been able to defend for the last 10 years, you just learn to live with it.
Not surprised, though. Not surprised.
With the Liverpool side, that's not the issue. It's okay they're winning games now and they're doing well. It's if they get to that stretch at the end of the season where they come to like 10 games and they have to win every single game. Do you think they've got the mentality and the players? Don't think they have. I think other teams are better equipped to go through them stages. I know Leicester did it, but that was just a one-off. That'll never happen again.
Another one that's just done that, just to tell you, that Zappa Costa signed for Chelsea. It's all done. The Torino right back has completed his deal. And let me just say, I love how dramatic Italian clubs make transfers sound. Listen to this, right? The Torino Football Club announces that it has definitely surrendered a player to the Chelsea Football Club, the right to athletic performance by football player Davide Zappa Costa. Love that. Drama.
Well, they've got to make the most of it, I guess. Got the most of it. Well, look, you guys have just mentioned Chelsea and you guys have just mentioned Leicester. Apparently, according to the Daily Star, don't take that as gospel. Danny Drinkwater has just passed the medical. So what would you guys say about that? Would he improve Chelsea somewhat? I mean, they've got Bakayoko, they've got Kante.
That central pair have won a Premiership title. Kante. And yeah. Drink water, so why not?
But does he get in the lineup for you, Rodri? Does he get in over Fabregas or Bakayoko?
Well, if they're going to play a three, then yeah, definitely. Because Fabregas is okay going forward, but he's not so good going back. More likely than not, he would play more. Because I don't think Fabregas is Conte's cup of tea, even though he's a fantastic player and an offensive player, but does he go the other way? I think he does. So
it's interesting. Interesting. Go on, mate, carry on.
Rodri, do you not think though that Antonio Conte's formation allows you to have one of your central midfielders be a bit more sort of advanced? Because playing with a three centre-backs, and David Luiz often steps up and kind of fills in that gap. And then you've got Kante, who can run all day. And but I personally think that Danny Drinkwater isn't even fit to lace Cesc Fabregas's boots in terms of ability and quality. And that's coming from someone who severely dislikes him for leaving my club. But, you know, I just think that Fabregas is a different level of player. Like I said about Tottenham earlier, Drinkwater for me is just a squad player. It's not an improvement on anything. I don't think Ross Barkley would have been an improvement to what Chelsea have already got. I feel like they're just signing these players to make up the numbers. Like, I don't know. Drinkwater doesn't really, he doesn't jump out at me as a top addition to that Chelsea side. I think they've already got
that. You say that, but he's a Premier League winner. You've got Ramsey, you've got Ozil. What if they want?
Yeah, but I mean, so, yeah, but
no, but as a player, he would play more than Fabregas. I know if we're talking about individual players, Fabregas is a better player, but is in a team. For me, in Conte's team, I think he'd play more than Fabregas. He's not the type of player.
I think Drinkwater is exactly that. Just like you said there, Rodri. I think Drinkwater is exactly the kind of player that Conte wants. He works hard. He does a job. You know, he does the donkey work.
Yeah, but is he really, or is he just a player they're bringing in as a squad player who pushes up that British quota?
He's a player.
They had to sign an English player before the deadline day because they would not have passed the Premier League regulations for the British players in the squad quota. They had something like three. Yeah, they could promote one, but they have to have, is it five or six? So they had to sign someone. I just see him as that type of, he was the best of a bunch, I think, for me.
That's my personal
opinion.
One of our guys, Dan DeLuca, on our podcast, he actually said this a while ago as well. Danny Drinkwater owes his England caps to Kante because without Kante being next to him, and I genuinely do believe that, like, Kante carried him. I genuinely believe that. Like, Drinkwater didn't impress me last season. Not at all. So why all of a sudden, like, Roger, you said as well.
Sometimes these players go unnoticed. Like you'll see in every game at Old Trafford or United play this year, Matic will go unnoticed.
So many plaudits this season, Matic.
I don't know. I'm not sure on that. I do sort of agree with you, Roger. Sorry, Roger. I was going to say, I would agree with you that once upon a time that was the case. But I think Carrick's changed that. I think Michael Carrick and maybe Paul Scholes towards the end of his career sort of changed that underlining midfield role that wouldn't usually get the plaudits to suddenly start getting the plaudits, especially at the end of the Scholes era and the start of Michael Carrick really getting the recognition he deserves. I think that's...
I've got a different... Sight from it, because I've seen Danny Drinkwater grow up from the Man United days, so I've seen him play since he was 16, 17, 18, so I know what type of player he is, and then to go to Leicester, and then to win a Premier League. So I do think, Kante helped him, but I still think he can improve Chelsea's side, and he would do a better job than Fabregas, both set.
There you go. So I'll tell you what, Andre Silva, that fella from Barcelona, apparently he was meant to come over to play in the Premier League. No one wanted him. Can you not see why?
Andre Gomez, isn't it?
Andre Gomez, sorry.
It's just done.
I was thinking about the bloody guy that was Adrian Silva.
Well, actually, Adrian Silva, Leicester have asked DFA for a two-hour extension for that Adrian Silva deal to get it over the line from Sporting. And Spurs have announced the signing of Llorente. We knew it was going to happen. And it has got over the line. So they're done deals. And that's what's going on there. And Boney's just been 100% confirmed as well by Swansea. So there's still a lot going on. It's weird, the whole Barcelona thing at the moment. Barcelona, I've said it on the podcast. I'll say it again. They're a club in decline. It's not a team in decline. It's a club in decline. The weird thing about Barcelona is there's no freshness in their side right now. There's no one really who you would say that in that side who is the next big thing. And you look off the pitch, they're not recruiting well. Now, I done a video on this on my channel about 2-3 weeks ago when everything started kicking off at Barcelona. And I look back at the transfers, and 5 years ago was their last successful transfer. And that guy was Luis Suarez. which is crazy. That's the same season that Puyol, Valdez all left the club. And since they've had Xavi go, they've had numerous amounts of players leave who have potential to be in that Barcelona side now, including young talent. They've not bought in good enough defenders. They were willing to flog off Umtiti this transfer window, if you believe rumours. He's one of their best defenders. It'd be ridiculous. They're a club that they don't know what's going on right now. And there's no rest off the pitch. Is it Bartomeu? Is that how you pronounce it? Their president, everyone wants him out, from the boardroom to the fans. Bit like the Arsenal situation, but more boardroom politics going on. No one knows what's happening. And it's getting to the point where they might even have an overthrow of the presidency. And obviously that would never happen in English football, but it looks like it's happening out there. So it's a club in unrest, and it's a club where they don't have any direction whatsoever. They've only got prime Messi for another 2 years, maybe. Then what? They've not got Neymar. Dembele's just come in, but as I've said, even German tabloids are questioning that move. Who have they got? Iniesta's going to have gone. Busquets would be towards the end of his career. Piqué. It's a club where they've just not bought well. They're not working properly as a unit, as a team. They're not working properly off the pitch. They haven't got the right people in the right places. And they are very much behind Real Madrid right now. And that is not going to change. It's been a nightmare 2 years for Barcelona. Nightmare.
Yeah, but they are behind Real Madrid, I agree. But don't forget, you mentioned all these players. They all came through at the same time. They all played together. They all were successful together. They all left at the same time. Look at Real Madrid a few years ago. Even round about when Mourinho was there, they'll bring in players like Adebayor, for crying out loud. You know?
So, but there's a process, isn't there? There's a process. That you buy players ahead of advance to know that in 3-4 years' time, you're going to need them.
They don't know who the manager is in 3-4 months' time, let alone 3-4 years' time.
Ben, I think you're being a bit harsh on Barcelona, because I think you've got to realise that Barcelona team that you've just mentioned there in the past is probably, I can hold my hand up and say it's the best club side I've ever seen in my life in terms of the quality of players, the way they played football, the whole package. So you're always going to compare them to that, which is, I guess, fair enough, but they're victims of their own success here because...
You revolutionise, though, don't you? You revolutionise. Yes, you might have it good right now, but that doesn't mean you're going to have it good in 3 years. As a club, you've got to move. As a club, you've got to be ready for what happens next. And Barcelona are nowhere near ready for what happens next. They really aren't. They're not ready for what's happening over at Madrid right now. And look, Madrid might have been quiet this window. They're going to be busy next summer. I can absolutely guarantee it. And they've got a sense of victory. They've got a couple of other lads, who's also coming through over there. So they've got a solid unit. They've got a solid spine. That Barcelona spine, there could be three players in that side retired within the next 2 years. That's the way that team's going. And there's no one to come in. The only player you would have said who could have come in, and we forget, by the way, Suarez is 30 next year as well. The only player who was really evolutionising Barcelona was Neymar. And he's not there anymore. He's not there anymore.
I think they took that front three for granted. Let's be 100%. Messi has been carrying them for years. And I said this weeks ago. He's been carrying them for years.
Without a doubt.
And it wouldn't surprise me if he leaves.
But still, what team wouldn't Messi carry, though?
He's not good
a player. Like, he's going to shine in any team he plays in.
Yeah, but Neymar gave him another option as well, though. That was the best thing about Neymar. And with Suarez in there as well, they had two other players in there that gave you other options. Messi has been a constant. Don't get me wrong. He has been an absolute constant. But now they've got Suarez or Messi. And that's it. And that's not enough. Busquets is always going to do you a job holding. He's always going to do it. But he's got another 2-3 years left. And there's no one to sort of give him a breather. That's the best way to put it. You name me the Barcelona bench right now. Name me the Real Madrid bench. You could probably spin it off the tongue straight away. You know that Morial is going to be on it. You know that who's playing in goal at the moment. It'd be one of Bravo or who's playing in goal for them right now?
Stegen.
No, that's Barcelona. I'm on about the Madrid keeper. It's bloody, what's his name? His name's completely evading me. Navas, that's it. So you sort of know what they're going to do. You know Carvajal's going to be in and around there. You know Varane Ramos is going to be in the first team. And then you look at the bench, you know they're going to have players on the bench ready to come in and fill those spaces. Lucas Vasquez and Asensio and Bale or Ronaldo, you know, with the way that Asensio's going, Bale might even have to start off on the bench before he gets back in the side. So you know that they've got options. With Barca, you couldn't name one option that isn't in the first team. You just couldn't do it.
It just works as cycles, Ben. You know, all the great teams, they're broken up eventually. The great Milan team in 94, they were broken up. You know, Man United in 99, Arsenal's Invincibles. They're all broken up.
And it's too much money in football nowadays, though, for that to happen like that.
I don't think so. I mean, I just think that you've got that continuity there. When you've got a team and you've got that leadership and you've got that camaraderie, when it's broken up, it's difficult to get it back. It's not the same. It really isn't the same. I don't know whether you guys disagree with me or Roger. What do you reckon?
Well, you've got to see these cycles coming and prepare for them. How many times did Alex Ferguson evolve his side? And you've got to obviously see that coming. A good coach or a good manager or a good people upstairs, a director of football, whatever, would see this coming. But obviously they're not. And, you know, like, they're going to be struggling down the line. Because once Messi retires and a couple other players leave, they're going to be struggling, really, really struggling. Because Messi has carried him for at least 3 or 4 years now. Obviously, Suarez and Neymar has helped, but you know Messi has ultimately been the man and pulled him out of trouble when needed. So, yeah, they've got that. Someone have to see this coming and evolve the side, but it's just not been done. They'd obviously said they'll spend big money on midfielders or strikers, but I don't think they'll spend big money on defenders, which is a massive problem. From once PK goes, when that was a problem, now PK is going to be going soon, and they're going to be in trouble soon enough.
Well, the major criticism has been players haven't been coming through La Masia, but then when you look at teams evolving, I mean, you mentioned Ferguson with United. You know, he retired, and then David Moyes came in, then Van Gaal came in, and now Jose Mourinho's in, and only now we're starting to see United come of age, so to speak. With Barcelona, they had Rijkaard, then they had Guardiola, who was dominating for 4 years. Then Villanova came Martino came in. Luis Enrique came in. Now they've got Ernesto Valverde. So you're looking at four managers since Guardiola. So, yeah,
but this is a different era. I've got to say that I completely agree with you with what you're saying with the transition of young players and the transition of managers and also the transition of clubs and the way of preparing for the future and old teams dying off and then it taking a few years and then they get back to their best. But this is a different era. Football and politics dominate football. And you've got to be moving with the times. As I said to you earlier on, to a lot of owners, you know, we're just a brand to a lot of owners. So owners need to pump money into that club. Barcelona isn't a brand. It's not the same. Barcelona is managed from those pure footballists up top and a president and is very much a very political club. It is, let's face facts. But let's not take anything away from the young players in and around the Barca B team and the Barcelona squad right now. But you tell me just a good player who has come through recently. We have the freaks like Mbappe and Rashford and these guys who are young and they come out the youth system and they go straight into first teams. But you tell me just one consistent good player that has come out of an academy over the last couple of years and he's playing regular first team football. They're not. They're all wonder kids. And that's the difference. Same with Asensio. Asensio hasn't come out the academy at Madrid and just been a good player over the past 12 months for them. No, he's looking like a bloody Ballon d'Or winner in the future. It doesn't happen as much anymore. The best thing with that Barcelona side when they first all came to fruition was that they were all good players that improved to become quality footballers. So you can't really... I say you won't ever see players like that come through a youth system again because I'd be like, who was it? Alan Hansen back in the day with the famous class of 92. But it can happen and it will happen at some point. But right now it isn't happening. So you have to buy in a talent and you have to invest in them. And Barcelona haven't done that. It's their own fault. And they're in demise because of it.
Fair enough. Well, gents, one more question before we wrap this one up. What's been your general opinion of this transfer window, not deadline day? Has any team surprised you? Has any team won the transfer window, so to speak? Harry, You've been quiet lately. I think it's that Barcelona talk, hasn't it? All those flashbacks from 2006.
Yeah, I've got a lot of bad memories about Barcelona. In general, I think the transfer window has been crazy, to be honest. I know I sound like I'm about 50 years old or whatever, but I don't like the way it's heading. I don't know. It's become crazy. It's out of control. In terms of teams that have done good business, I think there's a few. I think you could say one that's kind of gone off the radar a little bit. I think West Brom have done some all right business. Obviously, they've managed to hold on to Evans this evening as well, which is good news for them. I don't know. Look, there's so many teams have signed players, and I feel a bit sorry for Newcastle in this window, to be honest.
Well, because they signed Babel.
Well, at least with Babel, he doesn't have to change his shirt. He could probably play the Besiktas shirt, black and white. I feel sorry for Benitez because I felt like he gave Newcastle a lot by sticking with them for that year and bringing them back up. And I don't know whether it's, you know, Mike Ashley says that he can't afford to back them as much as he'd like and so on and so forth. And fair enough if that's actually the case. But I think Rafa expected a little bit more. And so I don't think it'll be long before he's grumbling again about the window. But yeah, it's just a crazy window. It's been an emotional day as an Arsenal fan. No doubt when we lose our next game, it'll all kick off again. So just enjoying the peace for now.
Brilliant. Rodri?
Go on, was the question again.
Who do you think did well in the transfer window? And have you been impressed by any clubs' signatures or players they brought in?
No, not really. It's just shown me that what clubs are in dire trouble, really. Arsenal in dire, they're in proper trouble. The Sanchez issue, the manager issue. If he wants to get rid of the weeds, why are you keeping someone that doesn't want to be there? He's laughing on the bench when you're getting beat. Not the first time. He's done it a couple of times. That's a massive issue. Your team's getting beat and you're laughing on the bench. Now that'd be another. I'd be fighting with someone if that was on my team. So I just also Chelsea in his shoes as well. I think I've changed my mind on Swansea now after getting Boney and Sanchez. I think that'll strengthen them, even though they've lost Sigurdsson. So no, not really. It just told me this transfer window just told me really the teams that are in trouble or are desperate.
What about Everton? We didn't mention them. I mean, they've made two signings today, and it just seems that Ronald Koeman is strengthening.
Yeah, thinking about it, to be honest, Everton have done the best business in the summer. Rooney, arguably, he's scored a couple of goals. He's played well since he's been there. Sigurdsson's a fantastic player. And obviously, the other players that they've brought in are obviously strengthening the squad as well. So, you know, they might take the sixth place off Arsenal this year. Sorry, Harry.
I just want to say one thing before you move on to Ben. You know, like all this thing about Sanchez and, you know, that he doesn't want to be there and stuff. I think it's important to give Sanchez a bit of credit here because in an era where, you know, like Virgil van Dijk has refused to train and handed in transfer requests, Sanchez has kept quiet throughout this whole thing.
Harry, explain me laughing on the bench when you're getting beat 4-0.
Well,
explain that to me.
Yeah, no, it's not good. It's not a good look. There's no doubt about it. And he has, like you said, he's thrown tantrums in the past.
I agree with that context where he's that type of player that, you know, he'll still give you 100%. But, you know, he's a player that plays from his heart, that it seems to me. And will his heart be there? That's what I'm trying to say. He'll still give you 100% because he's that type of player. And he'll still give you quality. But deep down, the Arsenal fans will know that he doesn't want to be here.
Yeah, but to be fair, Rodri, like, I know he's not signed a new deal and stuff, but he's not come out and said, I want to leave the club, which is the case with so many others. Like, Coutinho's handed in a request, Van Dijk wanted out, he's out, you know, like, he got frozen out and stuff. Like, you've got to give Sanchez some credit for the fact that he just kept his dignity and kept quiet throughout this whole situation. And you know what?
Because you've got to put it into it. Maybe he's not come out, because if he does come out, he'll lose a shitload of money. And then you know, if he keeps his mouth shut, someone comes in from the year left, like City, have his £60 million, he'll get his money, he'll get his cut, or he can just sit it out and get more money when his contract. That could be his way of thinking. That's why he's not come out.
Yeah, and also, can I also say that, you know what, in these situations now, I still think he will sign a new deal at Arsenal just so they get something from Alexis Sanchez in the summer. How much of an idiot will he look if he comes out and personally goes, oh, I want to leave Arsenal Football Club, knowing that he has to put in a shift this year? Not just because of the World Cup coming up, but also because he is going to be getting a new deal. He will be paid more money by Christmas, and he will end up leaving in the summer to a city, to a... Who knows? He could end up anywhere. But surely he has to do that. He has to be a professional. He's paid to do it.
The thing is, though, as well, like, I think fans need to get over this whole thing of, oh, he doesn't want to play for my club, get rid of him. We need to get over that, because footballers are mercenaries. Alex Sanchez doesn't love Arsenal like I love Arsenal, and he never will. And we need to just accept that. Like, if you had asked an Arsenal fan 2 weeks ago or a few weeks ago who was their favourite players and they thought really cared about the club, I bet loads of them would have told you Alex Oxlade-Chamberlain does. But he's gone. He wanted out. Like, so you don't really know. Like, I'm glad he hasn't come out and said that he wants to leave and caused a shitstorm on top of the troubles we've already got. So for that, I just wanted to give him a bit of credit, because if he really wanted to, I'm pretty sure he could have forced this move through if he was really, 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 really against staying at the club.
You know, if it was an Arsenal fan, the last person I'd want to leave the club is Alex Sanchez, because he's by far your best player. So hopefully you do keep him, because you need him.
Exactly. And I think it was before you come on, Rodri, but that's what I said when we was talking about the transfer window. You know, it hasn't been great for Arsenal, but the priority was to keep Sanchez, as far as I'm concerned, and we've done that. So
can I just say, we've been done. Ryan Babel hasn't gone anywhere. We've been absolutely done by a joker. Ball Street done it earlier on their live stream. And no, Babel's not gone to Newcastle United. That's hilarious. Well done, lads. Fair play to you. Fair play.
Though, I think you need some different reporters, man.
Was it Flap or was it Martin?
It's a smaller one. It was a midget out of both of them.
It wasn't Matt, was it? No, Matt's pretty cool. Yeah, I'll have a word with Matt. What are they doing? Nah, to be fair, like, it wouldn't have surprised me if it happened, because stranger things have happened in the Premier League.
No, but if he goes at the end of the contract as well, they've just lost £60 million.
Mm-hmm.
They've got to think of that as well. So it's a massive amount of money to just throw away over a year.
But I think as a fan, like, that's what we've been so frustrated about, that it's always been about the money. And I don't care what Arsenal's bank balance is. I really don't. I want to see Arsenal perform on a pitch. Even if Arsenal had £300 million in cash reserves, they're still going to charge me the same price for my season ticket. So,
well, then you could go to the owner. It's bad business. But he's, you know, he's putting the club first. We could think of that.
Yeah. Well, if you put things into perspective, it's World Cup year. He can leave on a free in January, or he can sign a pre-contract agreement. And probably double his money and get a big signing on fee.
See, playing devil's advocate. Oh. What if, like, Arsenal come Christmas 8th? Do you think he's going to want to sign another contract, and his dismay in the club, and he's going to be off in January? Then it's going to cause other issues in the club to the end of the season. So hopefully, you know, you're up there, because, you know, if you're not, come Christmas, when it comes January, he can sign a pre-contract with someone else.
Maybe I'm biased, but I really don't see Arsenal struggling as badly as everyone thinks. I just don't see it. I still think they'll be fifth, fourth.
I don't think they do. It's just I've seen them play poorly before, but the amount of players that just looked disinterested on Sunday was, you know, when you're playing at Anfield, it's one of the meccas of English football, great atmosphere. And some of them just didn't look interested. Some of them were just turning away and not even looking.
There was nothing, was there? Like, there was no issue.
It was worrying. It was worrying. That was just me as a neutral thinking, wow, what's happened to this Arsenal team? Mm-hmm. Arsene Wenger on the bench, Steve Ball on the bench, nothing, no one standing up, screaming and shouting. Both of them looked lost, and it was just like, from a neutral, looked worrying. So being an Arsenal fan, it would have been tough.
By the way, before I talk about my transfer window, seeing as Harry's an Arsenal fan, I haven't actually got to ask an Arsenal fan this question before. So just quick, Harry, I've got to ask it for you. Do you think Steve Ball just sits there like a quiet child when they do defensive training? Because surely Steve Ball can't have a say in what goes on defensively at Arsenal.
Well, I think Arsene Wenger's very clever in his appointments, and he had Pat Rice there for years, who seemed like a bit of a, like, would you respect, I love Pat Rice, Arsenal legend, but seemed like he was a bit of a yes man. They even had the same haircut, for Christ's sakes, for God knows how many years. But yeah, I think Wenger dominates that bench. He does what he wants, and he only appoints assistants that will go with his way. And you've seen it with other players like Tony Adams, wanted a crack at working at Arsenal, you know, maybe not as the assistant manager, but he didn't want to know. Thierry Henry came and done some coaching, and then he was told, you either do it my way, you do what we're doing, and only that, or you've got to go. So he went. And it's happened with a lot of people. I think Wenger surrounds himself with the kind of characters that will kind of just let him get on with it. And that's one of the problems. But that's a topic for another day.
Yeah, it's interesting though, isn't it? Do you want my transfer, Estelle?
Go ahead.
Actually, as soon as I'm on this transfer window thing, I'll just give you a couple more that have gone through the line, shall I? My sources, Tomato Ketchup Heinz, said that Vincent Janssen is about to join Brighton. We spoke earlier on about Llorente coming in and what's going to happen to Vincent Janssen. Well, it looks like Brighton, right at the end of the window, have managed to get some time to try and push this deal through with Tottenham. Palace on the verge of signing Umar Niasse from Everton. That guy went there and was apparently brilliant and has done naff all there.
Did well for Hull last season.
Yeah, he done all right, didn't he? But you can't say that. You can't say that he'll be enough to keep Palace up, can you? I worry a lot about Palace this season. I really do.
He'll be back up to Benteke.
Yeah, could be. To be fair, I always forget that Benteke plays for Palace. I don't know why. I think it's because we don't talk about him as much. But yeah, anyway, talking about transfers, we've spoken way too much about Arsenal in this show. So let's chat about Manchester United, shall we? I think we've smashed it this window. And I really do. Lukaku has again oozed the class tonight for Belgium. A hat-trick for him. But it's not just Lukaku's goals. It's his hold-up play. It's his whole... I said one of my main things with Lukaku is, we don't know if he has a big club personality. And boy, does he have a big club personality. He's replacing Zlatan in some fronts between now and December. Between now and January, even possibly. And even past that, I still think he'll start. And to have him come in and still ooze class and personality just like Zlatan is beautiful. He is a younger, fresher, still has a lot to learn and can still get better version of Zlatan. He will do better than Zlatan did last season. This season for me, and I think he is going to brutally smash the Champions League, and I think he is going to be by far the top goal scorer in the Premier League, and that's not even just being biased. I think the player's quality, and I think with Mkhitaryan, Mata, Martial, Rashford all around him, we're going to get goals, and that's not even me talking about Paul Pogba. Their build-up play and the way Pogba and Lukaku understand each other is what's going to put United, if not, I'm not going to say it, if not lifting that trophy, to getting close to lifting that trophy. Because when you've got two players who understand each other like that, we spoke earlier on about the influence of having friends in the camp and around each other and on the pitch. Them two are best of friends, and that can only work in a positive way. Matic, why did Chelsea sell him? I mean, if I was Conte right now, I'd be banging my head against the wall because... No, we talk about Drinkwater earlier on. Drinkwater wouldn't get anywhere near that Chelsea side if Matic was in there. But last season, Matic was just as good as Kante, but didn't get the plaudits because Kante is Kante. Matic is a phenomenal footballer. He can do it defensively, and his turn of pace for me is important. Whether he's blocking a ball or is running forward, he has got an incredible turn of pace, which you don't expect for a big guy, and he's really gifted with both his feet as well. I've not seen him do as many Cruyff turns for Chelsea as he's done for United so far in his first few games. He has been absolutely brilliant. And, you know, and I haven't even mentioned Lindelof, who I think there is a lot to come from. And Mourinho is a perfect man manager. He's not leaving Lindelof out the side now because he doesn't think he's good enough. He's leaving Lindelof out the side now because he knows how important he will be come the end of the season. And we will see that. Mourinho is building a Galactico-style side here. And his first, seven transfers have shown that. We've got another big summer coming up. We've got Zlatan coming back into the side. United have all the ingredients to win the league this season. And that is what is so, so exciting as a United fan. And also on top of that, which is also even more exciting, is that we've got the Champions League football back and we've got a team that can get through the group stages this time. That, yeah, for me.
Harry loved all that, didn't you, Harry?
How? Sorry, Ben. Like, how can you insult the Galacticos by putting Lukaku?
No, I said he's building a Galactico team.
Oh my god,
he's building a Galactico team in terms of that he's winning. No, you're missing the point. He's buying players for big amount of money who are brilliant in their class to go straight in the side. If you remember, he didn't buy Fellaini. Fellaini is not one of those. In terms of big players, I'm talking Eric Bailly, who's more or less now proven himself to be a quality acquisition. Pogba is if not one of the best in the league, is possibly the best. Lukaku, you can't doubt him. Would you say Lukaku's not one of the best strikers in the league?
No, I'm not saying that. Look, I just
Ben, you've got
the word Galacticos and Lukaku. Just
no, he's building his own Galactico side. Is what I'm trying to say. I'm not saying that he's building the Galacticos. It's just a way that he's going out and spending the money on quality players to bring in to make his own sort of Galactico team. Look, no one's going to get close to those Galacticos. I'm not going to lie, and you can't mention players now in that same breath. I hate comparing players like that. But the way he's doing it is in the same mould, and he's got his own style of it. And I think that he will end up buying a Griezmann. I think he will end up buying a Bale. And I think that's the way he's sort of going with his transfers. He has individually picked out key players in key positions, and he's bringing them to the club. And he's built a spine already, which is really promising. It's about filling those gaps now. And that's what he will do in the future. And it's exciting for United fans. It's so exciting for United fans. And it's worrying for Arsenal fans and other fans of Premier League clubs.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned Matic earlier. Personally, for me, I think he's going to be a more important signing than Lukaku. In fact, just look at Lukaku's first goal for United against West Ham. Who won the ball? Who broke up play? Who distributed it?
It's a change of pace. It's ridiculous, isn't it?
It's just his reading of the game. It's his reading of the game. This guy is not—he's not just a physical Neanderthal that, you know, is a knuckle dragger. This guy knows how to play football. Yeah. He's the kind of central midfielder that United have lacked for years, for years. And I'm talking like even back when Roy Keane, you know, is that similar kind of presence that the way that he wins the ball and he knows who to give it to straight away. Is that kind of experience? It's priceless. You can't, you know, it's easy to say, oh, Lukaku, they spent money on Lukaku, they spent money on Lindelof, but Matic is going to be the key signing for me anyway. But listen, we could go on about United all night, really, because obviously Rodri's a United fan, you're a United fan, and I feel sorry for Harry.
Let's do it, Harry can just sit there and listen, it's fine. It's completely fine.
All right, okay, I'll tell you what, one more thing before you go.
This won't end. One more thing.
Because I said to Rodri at the beginning of the season, I thought that West Ham had a fantastic transfer window. They brought in players. Are they going to turn it around? So please just tell me they're going to turn it around.
No.
It doesn't help. It doesn't help when Snodgrass has come out and saying what he's saying, does it? That doesn't help one bit. He's basically said his manager doesn't know where to play him. So, and he doesn't play left midfield, and he's a left-footed midfielder. So work that one out.
No. I think West Ham, you know, West Ham, I've said this on one of our podcasts, I think it was last season, I think their expectations are just too high. Like, Bilic came in his first season, I think he finished 8th or 9th or something, somewhere around about there, and he overachieved. They moved to the London Stadium, they've started spending a bit more money on players. They seem to have this curse where they go and pluck out half-decent players. They arrive at West Ham and they just turn crap. I don't know what it is like. But I also think they expect far too much. And because like Gold, Sullivan, Brady, they've put money in there and their expectations are to move West Ham onto the next level. I think they're expecting too much too fast. And I give Tottenham as an example of a club that have developed over a long period of time and are now in a position to compete with everyone. Tottenham are a prime example for me. They've done it slowly over a number of years. Now they're building their stadium. They're going to move into a bigger stadium. And I think they're going to cement their place as one of the top clubs over the next few years. So I think Tottenham is the benchmark. Tottenham is what a club like West Ham should be looking at. But even at this point, they're still really far behind that. They're nowhere near what Tottenham are. And they need some to be a bit more realistic if they want to get there.
How big is the new ground at Tottenham? How big will that be?
They've gone 61,000, and they've done that just to have 1,000 more than us.
So they were the biggest club in North London then?
No. Oh, that was coming. Yes.
The biggest club. No way. 13 league titles against two, I don't think it's even a competition.
You know what's really interesting about West Ham for me, they need a run of home games for me, West Ham right now, and they're not going to get one for another six games. Which is really difficult with what's going on at the London Stadium because of the old track events. But one thing I can see happening, I can see Benitez leaving Newcastle and ending up at West Ham. I can see that happening. But then, do you know what frustrates me? Benitez is a too good a manager to be at Newcastle and West Ham. So it's one of those. But I can see that happening. I'll and Benitez could save their season. You'd take Benitez?
Yep, I'd take Benitez.
It says a lot that he was there at the UEFA Elite Forum of coaches. And last
he's managed Liverpool, Valencia, Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Inter Milan.
Yeah. And he's at Newcastle dealing with Mike Ashley. Bloody.
Newcastle's still a big club. I know they've just come from their championship, but still a massive club. But I know what you're trying to say.
I completely agree with you. Newcastle are a huge club. And I'm so happy they are back in the Premier League. They are a Premier League club. But with the way that Mike Ashley deals with that club, he doesn't deserve a minute of Benitez's time. He just doesn't.
Yeah, I agree.
Great stuff. Well, guys, I think we should call it a night. What do you reckon?
Yeah, by the way, thank you, guys. No, it's always good coming up. Always end up on here for 2 hours when I come on. But that's because you get guests like Rodri and Harry on, who are always great to chat to. So, cheers, lads.
Yeah, I was enjoying the Tottenham chat.
You've got to change the name to Fishing Rodri.
Yeah, I think it's only when I'm on, isn't it?
No, I'm only messing.
Well, you didn't see what he's been doing to little Jan the past couple of weeks.
Oh, about the pillows, I've seen that.
Right, that's a story.
No, about. He's not telling about the what's the who he looks like. What does he look like?
The guy from Posh Porn, yeah, PAWN, not PORN. We've got another 10 more minutes before TVX starts. I don't know. Better call him to see if he's all right. Right, gents, it's been an absolute pleasure having you all on. Before I let you go, Twitter handles, Rod?
Mine's Rod James Giggs.
Ben?
Yeah, at Ben Pierce Talk.
And you have a podcast as well.
Yeah, go check out The Topic. Thank you. Thank you for plugging that.
If you weren't going to do it, I might as well. And Mr. Harry?
Yeah, my Twitter is at Harry, and then my surname is Simeou, Symeou. I know it's a bit of a pain to spell, but I'm sure it'll be in the description underneath this. And then we've got our Sofa Sports News podcast, which still comes on quite often as well. So, that one's at Sofa Sports News _ because somebody nicked the name. And it's so annoying. But
people are so inconvenient, aren't they?
I know. And you know what? I can't find that Twitter. Because I want to message him and be like, just, what are you doing? But, yeah, don't know what's going on there.
Anyway, well, guys, it's been an absolute pleasure having you guys on. We're on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. We have a Facebook group page. We have a loads of other stuff, which I keep forgetting. Thanks to our partners, FNX Network, obviously. And we'll be back sometime soon. For now, take care.